G'day. Welcome to this week's podcast, where we'll talk pianos, horses and gold, phone boxes, e-bikes, petrol. Take you places like Shenzhen, you may not want to go, and Christchurch. In other words, it's a real snapshot of what Aussies are doing. Enjoy. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Jason from New Zealand. How are you, bud?
Good, thanks, Jase. Whereabouts are you from? Where are you?
Just outside of Christchurch, rural outside of Christchurch.
Okay, yeah. Good on you. Yep.
How's that? No, I just...
Go on.
Yeah, I wanted to give a call. And first of all, I want to say, like, you make my Sunday morning because, I've listened to you virtually every Sunday morning, and the way you talk about life and the country, and I've spent 20 years in Australia, and I know the country. I love it.
Uh-huh.
And the music is just beautiful. But I know you have a bit of a interest in the trots. And who won the Miracle Mile last night?
Well, I was there. Leap to Fame won. Yes.
You were there?
Yeah, I was there. I was there at the Miracle Mile. It was a great race. There were some nice races on there last night. And, Leap to Fame won, which is a mighty win. It's a mighty horse. Won a lot of...
Larry. I didn't win the New Zealand Cup, though. I think I was a bit unlucky last year.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say it was bred in New Zealand or something.
Everything's bred in New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, yes, you breed some good horses, good racehorses, and trotters too, and pacers. So, yeah, no, it was a good night, and, Leap to Fame, a lot of good horses. Don Hugo was in there, and back Captain Hammerhead. He said, was it Captain Hammerhead or... He came last, I think, but they're all good horses, and it was a good night.
No. If you're ever over in New Zealand, like today, we're going to a Moch Carrara, which is a grass track race or a grass track course.
Yeah,
they line the fence. Line the fence around to about the 800 metre mark, on the busy days, but today's not so busy, but we take about four families out. And
oh, I'd love to go. I've always wanted to go to grass track racing, and I've always wanted to go to something in New Zealand. I read about the races over there, the trotting races. Sounds good. What do you do over there, Jase?
I just work from home, so just doing some bookkeeping and accounts, nothing too hard.
And life in New Zealand's all right?
Yes, between golf, follow the harness horses. I've got a share in a couple, and my little boy and my partner. We live the simple but good life.
All right, mate. Good on you. Nice to talk to you, Jason. I hope we get to meet sometime. And thanks for listening.
So. I would love it. Okay.
Good on you, mate. See ya. Bye. Bryce is in. Where are you, Bryce?
I'm in Wagga Wagga, Macca. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's happening, mate?
I just came in at the end of your conversation talking about the kids and conservatoriums and that sort of stuff. And my daughter has learnt the bass guitar at the conservatorium in Wagga Wagga here, and she and four other kids have formed a rock band.
Isn't that great? How old is she?
She's 16. And they're doing a few gigs around the place, and they're actually starting to get paid for some of their gigs, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's always a great thing when you get your first paying gig with a band. But that's sort of unusual, isn't it, Bryce? I don't know. But when I was younger, about her age, a little bit older maybe, there were lots of bands around the place. Everybody did that. But I don't think kids and music are as, I know kids like music, but when we were growing up, everybody, if they didn't have a guitar or a saxophone or drums or something, they bought one and started a band. And I think it's wonderful. I think, now I think they're more wedded to their phones. I'm not sure, but it seems to me that way.
Yeah, definitely. Whenever they have a gig, they get really good feedback, and people around the area say, oh, there's nothing like this around at the moment. So it's good to get that feedback.
Yeah, well, learn things and play. I'm just reading Artie Shaw's, I don't know if you know Artie Shaw, wonderful clarinet player from years gone by around Benny Goodman's time. He was the equivalent of Benny Goodman. They were great saxophone. He was a saxophone player, but he's also a clarinet player, wonderful player. And he's talking about his time in bands and learning and all that sort of thing. And it's a great education, music, because you play for lots of people, you meet lots of people, you go and you play for a bar mitzvah, you play for a party, you play for a wedding and all sorts of things. And then you play at dances and well, and you meet lots of people and you play in big hotels, small hotels, you do balls. It's a great education apart from the music itself. And that's a wonderful education. But I think meeting people is the great thing about music. And everybody loves a band, Bryce.
Yeah. And the kids definitely get a buzz out of it when they are playing and getting a bit of a reaction out of the crowd. That's a great thing for them.
So she's 16. She goes to high school, but she also goes to the conservatorium, or is it conservatorium high school or what?
No. She just goes to a high school here in Wagga, and then she has lessons after school hours, a couple of lessons a week, and then their own band, which is not part of the conservatorium, just rehearses once on a weekend for a couple of hours.
Well, when I come to Wagga, I'll look you up and we'll get together, because I'm going to take my band on the road. It's only going to be a small band, about four or five piece. But, I think it's a great thing. We'll have a yarn and we'll talk music, because, as I said, it's a great education, Bryce. Good luck. What's her name?
Jesse.
Jesse. There's a lot of great lady bass players in Australia too and around the world. Addicted, there's a song called Addicted to Bass. I should find it and play it for Jesse.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
All right, Bryce, good on you.
Good on you, Macca.
Great to talk to you, mate.
You too.
See you, bye. Josh is in Ballina, is that right, Josh?
Yeah, hi, Macca. How are you, man?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to ring up. I've been trying to call you for a while, but never been able to quite get in, so I thought I'd get in early today.
Mm.
I was just had a few things to mention, but one was I've unfortunately been forced to I can't afford rent up here anymore, so I've been got a mate who lives, who's got some property, and he's allowed me to sort of set up for the last few months out here, and just how simple life I'm just really enjoying. The simple life of being out in the bush and like seeing the mozzies and seeing the bats and seeing, all of that stuff. It's like I always dreamed about living back in old colonial times, and it's sort of like I'm there again now. But that's sort of fun. The other thing I wanted to mention was we have a sort of a mutual friend, I suppose, Ewan Johnson, from here in Wallingbar. I packed in the second row with you. You had a song that was like all around the wool that you played before, and it's our rugby. We've turned it into a rugby theme as well. We call it All Around the Ball instead, and we sing it to the same tune.
I see.
Yeah.
Now that's probably all amongst the wool boys, all amongst the wool. Is that
what? That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't played that for ages and ages.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I know. That's how long I've been trying to get hold of you and like play it.
Josh,
I've been listening for ages. Yeah.
Tell me, you're living out there in the bush. What do you live in? You got a tent, or have you built something, or what's the story?
Basically the back of me Subi. I do have a tent there, I just living out of my car it's such a. I'm eating plenty of spuds on the fire, and
so you have a fire, little kitchen sort of thing, have you?
Yeah, set up? I've got a setup. I've sort of made a lean-to over the top of my fire pit, so because we've had a lot of rain up here lately, so that was interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah,
and you
it's
get
like to... such a good. It's compared to like the hustle and bustle of like in town, I'm just really enjoying it, just like, and I've been out here for 4 months now, and just me and my dog
and the mozzies,
me and the march flies.
Oh dear.
Mozzies
are worse, mate. But and what do you do, Josh? Have you got a gig, you got a job of any sort, or
mate, I'm a youth worker, so I sort of work with the young kids up here and try and keep them out of trouble. Not always easy, but I just the rent here in Ballina is gone skyrocket and is the lowest vacancy in the country, apparently 0.6 or something now. So me and me dog can't find a place for Buckley. So fortunately, I've got a mate with a bit of property out here at Broken Head.
Mm.
And, yeah, so it's sort of, I just can't believe how much I'm actually enjoying it and not stressing as much. And even though things are a bit tougher, it's just great to be out in the bush. And because it's, you know, it's rainforest. So I think I might be growing a few mold things on my feet here and there, where, you know, there's a bit of moisture to get the old dead old out and give them a dose. But I'm enjoying the simpler life, mate. Well, you know, it's.
Well, I can understand when you're stuck in traffic and our cities and large towns, as you say, the rents are going up, everything's going up, and there's lots and lots of people. So I can maybe understand it. Doesn't it's not for everyone. It wouldn't be for me, Josh.
No,
I couldn't cope.
But if
you're loving it or enjoying it, well, that's the main thing, mate. That's what life's all about. You got to try and enjoy what you do or where you are.
Yeah, well, I'm enjoying the actual bush, you know, like it's, you know, like, you know, critters there, you wake up and you can just hear a little bandicoot digging right next to you, and the, you know, the border collie, my doggy, has a bit of a growl, and I tell him to settle down and leave him alone.
Well, Josh, good on you, and good luck, mate. Good luck.
Cheers.
Do you still play rugby?
No, mate, I gave that up. I packed in the second row with Ewan. So we were pretty tight that way. I gave that up when I was 37.
Yeah, all right.
38, realizing that the guys that I couldn't catch were half my age.
All right, Josh, good luck, mate. Steer clear of the mozzies, and good luck.
Yep. Mozzie calls.
See ya. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. You've got Hunter here from Bendigo. How are you?
Good, thanks, Hunter.
That's good. I'm just coming off night shift. I work at Fosterville Gold Mine. So I thought I'd just give you a bit of a call in.
And what do you do there, Hunter, at the gold mine?
I'm a jumbo offsider, which is considered a high priority role, but I guess I'm secondary to that, so I'd still classify myself as priority in some aspects.
So how many people work in a gold mine like Fosterville?
Oh, mate, I think at the moment there's just about over 600. That's combined with surface and underground as well, because we've got our own on mill too, which we refer to those people as mill rats. We don't really have too much to do with those fellas.
So, and gold is booming, isn't it? It's the old days of Bendigo and Ballarat and Melbourne were built on gold. I suppose it's returned. Is this, you're going through old tailings, or is this new ground you're mining, or what?
So we're going back to old dirt now. There was quite a substantial amount of low-grade dirt that was considered, but obviously with the price of gold, we're now going back into those areas. Because it's almost at $8,000 an ounce now, which is just ridiculous. Once upon a time, a couple of years ago, it was only around that $2,000 and $3,000. So now it's all worth our time.
Well, it's almost anything. I've got a small piece of gold, which is about as big as a head of a nail or something like that. But that'd be worth hundreds of dollars now, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be worth a pretty penny, and I'm sure it would keep climbing in value, mate.
Well, it may do. It's a hedge against inflation around the world. I suppose that's what it's all about. But I don't know what you can do with gold. If you're just left with gold, you can't eat it. But it's the hedge against inflation, so cool. So that's why the price is so high. Hunter, how did you get into gold mine? Did you know anything about gold before, or is it just or you're learning lots about gold or whatever?
Yeah, it was a new venture. I'm only 25 years old. I came from doing white collar work in Melbourne, and I just wanted a bit of a life change. I felt like I was living pretty reckless there in a sales role, and it's been fantastic. It's brought a lot of structure into my life. It's taught me how to be a lot better with money. And if anything, it was something we missed out on school. There wasn't much programs leaving high school to get into this industry, which I think it's fantastic. You learn a lot of structure, how to be better with your money, and I think those things are quite important when you're young going into the workforce and saving up for a house deposit.
Oh, you spoke a book. I mean, I think, you know, the more I see, think about my school days and school today, you almost need to learn new things. I mean, it's nice to know a bit of ancient history, and that's good, but the imperatives today are getting a job, especially with, you know, the way things are. So you need to be valuable in terms of getting a job, because it's all very well art for art's sake and money for Christ's sake. As my dad used to say, you need to be valuable to somebody so they'll employ you. So, they're sorts of things that you probably need to learn at school. And I know people say, oh, no, you can't. It's nothing to do with getting a job. It's, you know, education. Well, you get an education by, as you say, you obviously have got an education by working in that job.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I feel like there's just a big push to keep people in the system. Like, go to university, you get debt, and you're not even guaranteed work after that university degree either. So it's just like, well, for someone who might be doing an apprenticeship for 3 or 4 years, they're going to be earning a lot more money than somebody who's studying something, say, business management. It's completely irrelevant, you know. So I think there just needs to be a bit more transparency through our education systems about what people should actually consider, opposed to just jumping into what they think's right or what their parents want, because 9 times out of 10, they don't actually end up sticking to what they do, but they've just got a nice 70 grand debt to their name.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to, yeah, I couldn't understand that. I mean, we had to pay when you went to uni or whatever, we had to pay each term, I think we paid. For a while, but yeah, that was done and dusted. And once you finished, you paid your term fees and your yearly fees. You went on to the next year. You didn't have a whole debt that was piling up behind you. But anyway, getting back to gold. So are you underground, or what do you do?
Yeah, I'm underground.
How far?
I struggled to hold a tan, but at the moment we're down at 4.5 kilometres, I believe, and the total tunnel network is about 168 kilometres, so it's Bendigo to Melbourne if you put it in a straight line, which is pretty impressive.
Wow, and I suppose, as I said, Bendigo-Ballarat, that the triangle there, was the great gold mine of the 1860s and 70s and things like that. But are there lots of gold mines, working gold mines down that area now, down around Bendigo-Ballarat?
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting news actually coming into this region for gold. There's a couple explorations happening at the moment under Falcon Metals and Catalyst. They're doing work in Pyramid Hill and also in Kangaroo Flat. They're looking to get permits to mine there, which is exciting. And there's another company that's just bought into Malden to reopen that mine. So it's a bit of a boom happening within this 50-kilometre radius.
Yeah, and it may be because of the uncertainty in the world, and people are reaching for something because, you know, there's wars on here and there, and inflation and all those sort of things, and things are unstable. So people, you know, grasp for anything. It's a bit like toilet paper during COVID, or petrol now, or petrol and diesel. People trying to get more and more. So maybe that's part of the rush for gold too, that people... But as I say, you can't eat it. If it hits the fan, we're stuck with bars of gold. What do you do with them? You know, I don't know, build a house. I don't know.
So it's a bit of a contradictory to the old saying, where you don't make money finding gold, you make money selling the shovels. So.
Well, Hunter, I'm glad you made a great choice, and you're obviously learning a lot about life, and that's great. And you're in the great growth industry in Australia, really, gold mining. We've always been great gold miners here from east to west, and I'm sure it's the same over in Western Australia and other places in Queensland and wherever there's gold, New South Wales. I'm sure when people realise that it's $8,000 an ounce. Is it an ounce or a gram? An ounce.
Yeah, an ounce, correct.
That's a lot of dough. And so there, no wonder there's people out there fossicking you with metal detectors and things like that.
Yeah, it sure is. We've even had a couple of people out the front of our gates at work fossicking for gold. I mean, the concept makes sense, but do your best.
All right, good on you, Hunter. Nice to talk to you, mate, and good luck. Keep in touch, eh?
Thanks, Macca. Take care, mate.
See ya. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Brendan in Longhun District, Guangdong Province in Shenzhen, China.
Oh, g'day, Brendan. Brendan, ladies and gentlemen, I met Brendan in Brisbane last year. Was it last year, Brendan?
Last year, yes.
But and you were sourcing and accessing spare parts for e-bikes and all sorts of things like that, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm in China for a work trip. They call it a China Day.
Right. Yeah, tell us more.
It's the year of the horse over here, and the fire horse, and that implies intense energy and rapid change. This city here in Shenzhen, 40 years ago, it was a small fishing village, a population of 20,000 people. It's now got 18 million people.
That's about the population of Australia, roughly.
Pretty much.
Give or take a few million, but anyway, yeah. And so you're over there. What are you doing? You're sourcing things. Let me get this straight. You source parts for e-bikes and things like that and other things as well?
Yeah, spare parts, masterclass spare parts specialist. So you come over and you do a bit of a tea ceremony you do with your suppliers, and you have a look at the factories, and you have a bit of a chat, and you talk about your plans you're going to do this year. And that's pretty much the damn thing, really.
And spare parts are hard to come by. What's the story with the spare parts industry?
A lot of people import scooters and don't have spare parts for them. So that's my role, is to sort of keep people on the road as a specialist doing that. Yeah, so that's, a bit of a new trade for me.
Are the bikes all... They treat bikes differently. I'm going to talk about it in our all over news, but bikes all over the place in the cities in Brisbane. I know because I've talked to people in Brisbane, in Melbourne, in Sydney. People just leave these e-bikes, green bikes. That's what you're talking about. Plus, I call the e-bikes the big one with tractor tires and things, which go around, 40, 50 k's long bike tracks and things like that. But so you source parts for all of those, and China's the place that's making the parts. Is that the story?
Yeah, exactly. That's where they're all made. There's so much going on around here. If you sort of stop to take note of what you observe, you'd miss out on the next thing. Look, the traffic lights, for example. In your car, on your GPS navigation, on the sat nav, it'll count down on the screen on your phone or your display when the traffic lights are going to change. So when the traffic lights go green, all the cars move in concert simultaneously at the same time through the lights. There's none of this, first car goes, second car goes, third car goes.
Well, I can sort of understand, but you had to be there, Brendan, I think.
Yeah, there's not much cash going around here. They're all, even the bank cards, you don't have much of that. It's all ALI Pay and WePay. That's how they pay. The taxis are pretty uncommon. It's all rideshare. And even a lot of the restaurants, they don't have kiosks where you'd order a meal yourself. It's all done on your phone, on your device. If your battery runs fat on your phone, you're pretty much stuffed.
Well, see, and that's one of the China's. It's not my cup of tea. China. No. I think one of the reasons they're no cash is they want to control everything and everybody. And I suppose when you've got 1.4 or 5 billion and counting, the powers that be, Mr. Xi and his team, want to control everybody. They don't want anybody making their own decisions over there. That's my take on it. So that's why there's no cash. We don't want any of that. And yeah, the rest is history, as you know what I mean. It's not the place I'd want to live in, China.
No. Well, they don't even, have helmets on their heads when they ride their scooters around the place. They're not electric scooters, but, like the motorbikes that they ride around. Mm. You don't see a lot of accidents. You're surprised, the amount of risk you think that's going on, and yet everyone seems to be able to get around pretty well without too much damage on the footpaths and the streets. They beep the horn, let you know, and all that sort of stuff. So interesting.
We hear great stories, especially from the green revolution, that China's going green. Is there much pollution over there that you've noticed?
No, not much pollution. I was quite surprised, you know, having visited other countries like, you know, Bangkok and that sort of thing. Not too much pollution here at all in Shenzhen. It's the third largest city, and it's all quite new. Most of the cars on the road are electric.
All high-rise?
All high-rise, yeah. Everything's very modern. Well, the bloke I saw the other day, he's on his fourth electric vehicle, and the next bloke I saw, he doesn't like electric vehicles at all. So it's all sorts.
All sorts. And you're in China because that's the place that makes most of the spare parts.
This is the place that does a lot of the technology. Further north where I was when I landed in Shanghai and just south of there, Ningbo, that's where they do a lot of the manufacturing and manufacture the parts. More pollution there, that's where the port is. This is here where I am, there'll be an office where they're producing electronics right next door to where people live.
I see. All right. Well, anything else to report, Brendan?
I'm going to go and get myself a haircut. There's a bloke on the street doing cuts for $2, Macca.
Well, you can't, yeah, you maybe get it all cut off at those prices. dear, Brendan, well, we've no idea. I've no idea about, we had a lady, a young woman who used to ring us from time to time. She was living for a year or two in China. She wrote a book called A China Moment, and I think she was in Shanghai, and she lived in the back streets, and she got to know all the poor people, the street people, if you like, and people who lived like that. But I think that's sort of changing quick smart in Shanghai. But she said that was the best part of China, but she went back some years later and she said it's not the same. It's a growing place, isn't it, China? But as I said, it's not my idea of life, but we're used to a different lifestyle here in Australia, aren't we?
Yeah, well, if you're a traveller, pack them with Macca Sunday morning.
All right, Brendan, good on you, mate. I'll talk to you soon.
See you.
See you, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Ian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
It's Tony from Yalana.
Hi, Tony.
At the final day of the National Sheepdog Trials up at Hall in the ACT.
Oh, right. Okay. There'd be a lot of people there from all over the place, from all over Australia, I guess, Tony. I've been there, 5 years ago?
Yeah, about 5 years since I spoke to you.
Mm.
We talked about the late, great Greg Prince and his achievements in this sport. But it's a great sport, and it's keeping me going. I'm 90 years of age, and I'm the second oldest trialer in Australia. And I've never met a greater bunch of people in all my life. They all barracked for the fella out there or the woman out there with their dog against the sheep. And you won't find that camaraderie or support in any other group of people I've ever come across.
It's amazing sport, Tony, because I wouldn't have the patience. I couldn't stand it. You learn patience. As the bloke said to me once, I think I was down at Hall, I was in Canberra somewhere, and he rang up and he said, Macca, there's a man, a dog and three sheep, and one of them's always buggering it up. That's what he says, and I remember we were at Hall, and all of a sudden there's a dog out there with a bloke, and I think he was whistling, and one of the sheep took off, leapt the fence, and ran down the main street of Hall, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, well, if a sheep gets out of the arena, it's end of that particular trial.
Yeah.
So it's described as lost sheep, but so far. We haven't had any sheep out of the arena, and the sheep we're working with a lent to the association here by some people who run ultra fine wool sheep.
And right.
They're down to 11 microns.
Wow.
The little small sheep. And I saw Neil Carey at the Henty Field Days 2 or 3 years ago, and he told me he got $9,000 a kilo for one bale of wool.
That's
it's incredible. It's incredible how soft wool can be.
It's a wonderful fibre, Tony, isn't it? It's just the best.
And it's a great insulator, and it breathes, and it's natural. And I don't think it's got any other fibre in the world can compare with it.
No, that's for sure. So, Tony, where are you from?
I'm from Mirana in the Southern Riverina.
Uh huh.
And
how are you going? How are you going in the champs? Are you?
I've worked 4 dogs and got 3 scores, which is pretty good for me.
Uh huh.
My wife and got me interested in sheepdog trialling in my 60s, and I've now been at it about 22 or 3 years. And in introducing me to sheepdog trialling, she made a rod for her own back. because I go away sheepdog trialling, and she stops at home and I'm looking after all the animals.
Well, everything's got its benefits, Tony. Everything's got its benefits, so she probably enjoys the time alone too, mate.
Oh, she probably does too, mate, because sometimes I annoy her quite markedly.
All right, Tony. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you. Good luck. Say good day to the people there at the Sheepdog Championships in Hall in the ACT, and I hope to catch up to you sometime.
I've got a request, Macca.
Yep. Quick.
Would you play Why Murphy's Not at Work Today, seeing as St. Patrick's Day?
Okay, I'll try and I'll try and find it. I'll play for you later. Okay, good on you, Tony.
Thank you, Ian. Bye.
Thanks, mate. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and from Lee Harkness, our resident economist. Last week, he says, you read Don Radford's letter about inflation. He believed that the real cost of living was rising much faster than the rate of inflation measured by the Consumer Price Index. And what he wanted to do, Lee Harkness, was to get you to provide some stats. Well, Lee Harkness says, Don is right. Over the past 10 years, the CPI has gone up about 33%, but the cost of housing has increased by nearly double that, at about 64%. That gap matters because housing is the biggest expense for families. If wages had been rising by the CPI, a family buying a house in 2025 would need to borrow 23% more relative to their income than a similar family in 2015. If we go back 20 years, a family in 2025 would need to borrow about 56% more relative to their income than a family in 2005. Don is right, the CPI does not capture the real cost of living. And speaking of the cost of living and the cost of housing, John Harris has been a builder for 40 years. I think that's right, John, around about that. But lately, John, good morning. You've switched to modular housing. Tell me, how did that come about?
Well, I was working with a Hobart homelessness group and thinking, what's the answer? And I've been thinking about it for a long time. And the answer is, why are we building 8-foot high ceilings when no one in the house is over 7 foot? So we're heating up areas of houses that nobody lives in. And I was like, well, it's got to be smaller. Smaller has to make sense. And when this job came up with a company in St. Helens, they were building stylish and quality and classy homes. And I thought, well, that's been my space for my entire career. So I rang them up, and here I am 6 months later, and we've got, you know, builds coming out of our ears, and people really appreciate the quality. But your point about the economy is, my Facebook feed is totally full of ads for house and land, and I got one the other day. I don't know why they're targeting Tasmanians, but from Yeppoon, first-time owners, $749,000. And I just thought, imagine getting a home loan statement saying, hey, honey, we've got it down to $739,000. It's like... It's not just the destruction of society when both parents, hopefully, unless one's rich and you can borrow from the bank of mum and dad, which 40% of Australian home loans are now through mum and dad as well. Without mum and dad, you're not going to get approved. You know, the price of repayments means that both partners will work for 30 years just to pay the bank off.
What about people without no mums and dads?
Yeah, they've fallen off the ladder, mate. So in Tassie, where my interest lays, but I'm sure it's the same, we have a waiting list of people that gets longer and longer and longer. And so I coined a phrase called individual housing solutions. This is the person who's going to live in this home. This is where they're staying now. Let's build that person a home close. Who's going to live in it? Are you going to have kids? How old are you? You know, all of that kind of stuff. And so individual housing solutions, I believe, is the answer. We know who those people are. They're on a waiting list. We've got their details. Let's start working it out with them one by one. And if they did that Australia-wide, all this supply chain rhubarb and economies of scale and affordability would go out the door, because you're not building three-bedroom, two-bathroom houses for a single person.
John, do you? Yeah, John. Where do you source your modular homes? Do you build them yourself, or do you import them, or what?
Our company builds them in St Helens, Tasmania, proudly, with 32 local companies work on it. The timber comes from just over the hill, and everything that we use is Tasmanian or Australian, or it's bought through a Tasmanian or an Australian company.
And how much does a modular home cost?
Starts at about 240 and goes up from there.
Uh-huh. So you can have what you want, but basically that's a far cry. I look at real estate prices around Australia from time to time, and I noticed even in sleepy Tasmania, I'll call it sleepy Tasmania, the prices of houses where you see for sale is almost, you know, on a par with the mainland.
Yep. Yeah, sorry, I was just snoozing then because I'm in sleepy Tasmania. yes, it is, but it's still relevant because our wages are less as well. So your point about affordability and what economists say about it still resonates strongly, because I worked with a guy who published a document called Demographer, which was a global survey of affordability. And to your point before, it was 3.5 times last year's wage. Well, that's gone to billio now. That formula doesn't equate in Australia. And it's always about the price of the land too. And a lot of people get hung up about the house they're going to build. But if you're paying 900 grand for a block of land, you're not going to put a $230,000 house on it.
Land and labour is a big input for houses, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. 30% of our build is wages.
I'm talking to John Harris, who's a builder, now a modular builder. And you find that more satisfying to be involved in that?
Yes, it's quick, it's fast. The clients, I mentioned to a number of people that's, you know, that 7 of the last 9 builds were for single people, and 5 of those were for women over 50. They feel very empowered. They know what they want. They know what they don't want. They know where to go and why they would use a modular company. And I asked a lady here in St Helens, why did you choose us? And she said, look, I didn't want strangers walking around my backyard for 11 months. I didn't want the crap flying around from builder's waste. And I've got 3 kids and 2 dogs, and I don't want any of them to go missing.
I've got one of those right next door to me, actually. It's been going on for 1.5 years with bang, bang, bang.
Yeah. Oh, so they're on the fast track then, Macca. And look, I started here on October the 13th, and they're building a house just around the corner. They've just put the roof on, and we've put 7 houses out the door. So it's faster, it's cleaner, it's more environmentally friendly, there's very little waste. And so they call it modern manufacturing because it is faster if it's built indoors. It also starts drier and therefore less mould, less risk of mould. And we've got a 72-year-old lady's just built an 8.2-star energy efficient house. It's got the full pro climber wrap. You know, the house breathes. It's got no heater in it. In Tasmania, that's the definition of optimism, I reckon. But it's triple glazed, and she knew what she wanted, and we just said yes, ma'am.
But I suppose a modular house is not for everyone. Somebody wants the big mansion, don't they?
Yeah, but then the big mansion people tend to have the big mansion incomes. And so let's give that next generation of younger Australians a step into the property ladder, which, you know, you can buy a block of land here in St Helens for $150,000, put a $240,000 house on it, and that's not bad. You know, that's about as cheap as it'll ever get. You can certainly buy cheap imported ones from China as well, but I always am mindful of what's called volatile organic compounds. You know, what's been used to make this house. So we're using smarter, cleaner products. The kitchen doors are 80% recycled, all that kind of stuff, you know.
John, you've got a saying about the Vegemite economy. Tell me.
Yes, when I was a boy and television was black and white and I was the remote, you'd buy a smaller container of Vegemite for $3. And now that same Vegemite is $11.99 and you only buy it on special. So, you know, we're noticing it. We're feeling it at the pump. We're feeling it here. And I, look, maybe I can only focus on housing, but the housing minister has never built a house. You know, the education minister is not a teacher and hasn't worked in a school. That's part of the problem in Australia. We're electing people by personality, not by their experience. And that's the problem. We're leaving it to career public servants. We've got 50% illiteracy in Tasmania. You leave school and you can't even read and write. And that's just not good enough. Well, the minister's a newsreader. It's like, well, have you worked in a school? No. What's the curriculum update? Don't know. It's the same with the building industry. We appointed a panel and they've just been sacked because, you know, they weren't making a difference. And it's not hard. It's just, this is the person. This is where they want to live. This is the land that's available. These are the housing selections. Press hard, three copies, you know.
John Harris, I'll see you in St. Helens.
We will take you out on a boat and I've got a frozen crayfish in the back, so I'll make sure that we have a fresh one for you when you get here, Mac. It'd be a great place. Where I'm sitting would be a great place for a broadcast, and I'm sure everyone will turn up.
All right, good on you.
I can't believe you're not going to tell the joke about The Economist.
You know the joke about The Economist?
No, I don't, mate. Tell me.
So Brezhnev's up on the balcony and they're watching the Red Day Parade and tanks, ICBM missiles, this, that and the other. And then three old blokes come out in long coats and Brezhnev turns to one of his advisors and says, who are these three blokes? He said, they're the most dangerous weapon we've got. He said, really, what are they? He said, they are economists. Great to speak to you, Macca.
Yeah, bye-bye. Good on you, John. Thank you.
Thanks.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hey, Macca. This is Chris on the Gold Coast. I'm on my 4Ks into a 10K walk this morning because I'm training to go with my son for that Camino walk in Portugal and Spain.
Wow. What, the full Monty, the whole walk? Or
I'm 70, Macca. I might give that full Monty or leave that one alone. But the big one is 840 Ks, and that's from the Pyrenees in France. But it all ends up in Santiago at the Church of St. James, they call it. But I'm going from Porto, so it's in Portugal, to Santiago, 270 K.
And why are you doing this? I mean, people do these walks, don't they? They do the Kokoda. They do Kokoda and all sorts of things. But there's plenty of walks here in Australia. You can do the Bibbulmun walk and you can do the Human Hovel and you can do the one, the Western Australian one. What's it called? The Hans Heisen. Why have you done the Camino?
Well, I guess because I come from Seymour, Macca, so it's not too far from you. So, but I grew up at Seymour, and I guess it's just the Catholic thing in me, I guess. It's a pilgrimage. Always wanted to do it. I forgot about it for about 40 years. And then I heard it on the radio one day. I'm going, yeah, I might want to do that again. That was 10 years ago. So, and at Christmas time, my son was up to my 70th birthday, and he said, hey, Dad, I want to spend more time with you and bond. And I thought, let's do the Camino. So I've been training every day since the 1st of January.
Apparently, so that's
one day I have.
Yeah, apparently that's right about children. You never get rid of them. Once they're just because they turn 21, that doesn't mean you're still lumbered with them for the rest of your life, Chris, apparently.
Well, that's exactly right. We've got three boys, and two of them did a boomerang and came back. I only stayed for a couple of months, Dad. One was 3 years. The other one was a year and a half. But they're all gone now, and they're all very, very safe and happy, which is a great thing, and that's what all you want in life.
So
I'm looking forward to doing with Stuart, yeah.
Yeah, so you're flying over when?
Well, you've got to book the tour first because they pick up your luggage and you only walk with a backpack from one town to another. The furthest you walk every day is 27K and the smallest is 13. So we've got to be there on the 14th and... obviously, with this war going on, there was a problem flying. So we have to go via Singapore, London, London to Lisbon in Portugal.
Yeah, I suppose that's happening for lots of people now. They're going that way now.
You have to. Or else I think you can go to Perth and that big long haul that they do from Perth to London, which is about 17 or 18 hours or something. But we'll see what happens. Haven't booked yet. That part of it, so that's what's happening today.
Well, maybe ring us from the committee. I mean, lots of Australians do it, have done it. They've written books about it.
Absolutely.
I don't know. As you said, it's a Catholic thing. It's like my mate rang me up and he told me about the food they used to eat because I was waxing lyrical about going to school. primary school and high school and having all this wonderful food. And not that food at home was good, but, you know, you just had the normal thing. You know, had a chop or something. But you go to food and you go to school, primary school, and you get pies and cream buns and matchsticks. And then high school was the same thing. And a bloke rang me and he went to, I think, where did he go to? A school in, yeah, maybe in Newcastle, a Catholic school. He said, what did you, he said, oh, look, we had a great lunch. I had what we called a Bruno. He said it was a salad roll with a sausage roll on top with sauce. And he said we called it a Bruno. He said I think it was a very Catholic thing, but I didn't know. But your trip to the Camino is a very Catholic thing, is it?
Well, I think it started out that way about a pilgrimage about 1,000 years ago, but now it's. Just everybody does it who just wants to do something special. They've had a divorce, they want a change of life or something like that. But I know who I am, so I'm doing it just to do it with my son. But that's where it started out, but I don't think it's very, very religious nowadays. It's all about the money.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your flights get sorted too, Chris. And
thanks,
Macca. Yeah, have a good time, ring us, but it'll be the same thing.
I will.
Sore feet, sore legs. Yeah.
Oh yes, I've read all the paraphernalia and seen some of those YouTube videos and what you're going to get, and they tell me I'm going to be sore and I'll feel some pain.
Yeah, you probably will.
That's a religious thing.
Well, that's what it's all about, actually. I assume that's what it's all about. You suffer.
Well, it's just like I'm a Collingwood supporter. We suffered last night, Macca, against the Crows. I'm feeling a bit of pain this morning.
What? I didn't. I was, as I said, I was at the pacing last night, so I didn't follow the footy. I'm not.
The Crows gave the Pies a bit of a towel up at the MCG, and I think the poor old Collingwood played a bit like Meatloaf on that MCG grand final. Pretty ordinary.
Isn't it terrible? I mean, isn't it amazing how things like that, you know, you can write the 10 worst things that have happened in Australia, and one of them, I wasn't there and I didn't see it, but number one, number six, I don't know where Meatloaf would fit in the top 10, but it'd be in there. Apparently it was pretty ordinary, yeah.
It was, Macca. But I will go call you from the Caminos, because 14 days, the actual walking is every day, 14 days. So I'll have to check the time zoning and get up in the morning, early in the morning, I guess, to ring you from Europe.
It'll be late in the afternoon, I'd say, if you're ringing from there. It'll probably be 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, probably. Maybe.
Well, that's all right. I'll be in the taverna having some Spanish food with a glass of red.
No, you'll be in a cold ice bath having recovering. All right, good on you.
Good on you, Macca. Nice to talk to you, and all the best, brother.
Good on you, mate. See you later.
See you, buddy.
Bye. Good day. This is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Stephen here from Cooler. How are you?
From Cooler.
Curlwa, C-U-R-L-W-A-A, near Mildura, actually, Wentworth, Mildura area, down in that far southwestern corner of New South Wales.
G'day, Steve. What's happening, mate?
Oh, look, I'm just I'm absolutely frustrated at the buggery. We organise a Lifeline fundraising motorcycle ride every year to support our local Lifeline call centre, and this year we're going from Mildura to Robinvale and back, and most of the bikes need fuel at Robinvale, but there's no fuel.
No fuel in
Robinvale. No fuel at all at Robinvale for us to be able to get back. So I've got 200 bikes that that are going to support the cause, and no fuel at all.
So and they're all petrol. There's no diesel motorbikes yet, I don't think, is there, or anything like that? No electric ones, or maybe there is.
Yeah, there is electric ones, but I don't think anyone's got them up here. But it's quite frustrating. You do a year's worth of
organisation,
preparation, etc., and here we go. We've got 200 bikes ready, waiting to go, and we've
Yeah.
Well, so somebody might be listening. Maybe you get a. You'd have to get a. I remember once on the Variety Bash, which I went on, you know, numerous times. But one time, we were out in the middle of the nowhere, and there was a a great tanker out there, and we filled up from the tanker. I don't know how we did it now, but I think it was transferred to this. But is that commonplace for lots of country towns? Is it? Do you think, Stephen?
Oh, look, at the moment, I think it is, Macca. I've heard that Romvale, Euston had a Pooncarry, for example. They haven't got any fuel at all, so it's not uncommon.
That's a regional thing, just in Victoria. I wonder if it's. I've heard it about other places too, because people on the road, and of course, people are going on. We usually say here that after Anzac Day, people go on the road. They go to Anzac Day and then they take off in their cars and stuff like that. So that may be a problem too if this keeps up in the Middle East. But so there won't be much, won't be as big. And the cost too of will stop people too. But I don't know what to suggest, Stephen. Somebody might be listening.
I just needed to vent my frustration pretty much. what we do the ride for is to raise funds, because we've been doing this ride for 10 years to try and get a Lifeline call centre into the Mildura area, which we finally succeeded with 3 years ago. Now we've got 15 crisis support workers that take the calls from the 13, 11, 14 Lifeline number. Mm. And in the last 12 months, they actually took 6,000 calls just in Mildura. So that's...
And what do you do? I mean, you can't deal with that. I mean, you know, you just can't deal with that. And if that's just in Mildura, you can imagine what's happening Australia-wide, mate.
1.3 million calls Australia-wide to Lifeline every year. So,
and Lifeline wouldn't be the only organisation that's getting calls. I mean, it's...
No, far from it.
I don't know what you do. I mean, I just... Stephen, it's a crisis of some sort, but... you know, everybody needs a mother, but not everyone's got a mother. You know, your mother's the best counsellor, I reckon, you know, for lots of people, but not everybody's got a mother. And,
not everyone's got anyone to
no,
speak
exactly.
to or whatever. So what our aim is here, if people can't go on the ride, at least they can come down here, mix with other people that have got in the same mindset, and it's a safe place for them to talk or to start conversations or do whatever they feel that they need to do.
Steve, you're a champion. How can people get in touch with you if they want to?
LifelineRide.com.au would be the go.
LifelineRide.com.au?
Yes.
All right. Nice to talk to you, Steve. Good on you, mate.
Love your work, Macca. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol's in Iluka. Morning, Carol.
Hi. Hi, and how are you?
Good. Did you enjoy that piano?
I did. I used to play piano when I was a child.
And what happened?
Yes. Oh, I just didn't. I didn't have a house big enough to hold a piano, so I couldn't get another one when I got older. So,
yeah, that's the problem. Anyway, yeah, go on.
Yeah, in Iluka, holidaying here. The weather's cool. It's lovely. And no rain, though, hardly any rain or the sprinkles. Mm. I'm looking at boats all moored up in the little bay here. And 5 boats went out this morning out towards the head, so... out toward Jamba. So, it's high tide, really, really high tide here.
Yeah, but, and those river bars are dangerous things, aren't they? Some people were drowned the other day, weren't they, on one of those somewhere?
They were, yeah, a couple of days ago. I don't know why you would go out that day.
No, absolute madness, like driving through floodwaters. And it's like, I can't understand it. I just can't understand that people do it.
I can't understand it. It's crazy, aren't they? Yeah, it's very sad.
And you're in danger of the lives of people who are trying to rescue you as well.
Exactly, yes. Yes,
so you're just swanning around enjoying yourself, Carol. That's not good for the rest of us.
We we're swanning around enjoying ourselves, going from coastal town to coastal town, having a great time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to shout out to my mum in Winuna, Maureen. She listens to your show all the time. Yeah.
Well,
she's a Pommy from England back in 1965. They came out here as 10-pound Poms.
10-pound Poms. All right, Carol, good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
See ya. Bye. Penny's in Canoundra. Morning, Penny.
Good morning, Ian. Wonderful day here. Beautiful.
Yep.
Loving Autumn. Yeah, but what I'm ringing about is to let people know the Riverina Harvest Festival is on in Wagga next weekend. There's a conference on the Friday, and we're talking about things food. And it's about very much about sustainability, self-sufficiency, and sharing ideas and food for the Harvest Festival. So it's a conference on the Friday, the 20th, and on the 21st at the River Precinct and on the Murrumbidgee. There's going to be massive, big live music on the stage, lots and lots of stalls. There are workshops, and I'm actually hosting the chef's tent. So we've got seven local chefs. Well, not so local, because Paul West and Matt Evans probably don't fit the local bit, but it's going to be wonderful to have them there showing their expertise and using some of our local tucker.
Are you a chef of sorts, Penny, are you?
I call myself a simple country cook, and I cater. So I'm known as the ethical caterer because I only use food from the region where I'm catering. And the other thing about Wagga now, they have their growers hub, which is a local supermarket, if you like, it's a cooperative, which is filled with food from people who live in the area. So there is a real alternative to supermarkets.
All right. Yep. Sounds good. Sounds like a plan. And the Harvest Festival. Well, there's a song. I was just thinking about it. When the harvest time is over, Jesse Dear or something. But I'm not going to play it. But anyway, yeah. Harvest, we're getting back to all that, aren't we, Penny? People are getting back to that, sourcing your local foods and fresh food and all that sort of stuff. But it's still going to be hard for most of the people. When you drive around our big cities now and people are living in high-rise, they just don't have access to any of that. They've got to go to the supermarket and they've got to get food that comes from thousands of miles away. So it's, you know, it's only for those who can avail themselves of that, or if you live in the bush, like, you know, out of the big cities.
Yes and no. The supermarkets have done an incredible job in monopolising food as such. However, we are very vulnerable as a nation to have enough food to feed everybody. Years ago, 2 million people, this is in 2010, I got these figures, every night 2 million Australians went hungry. That's back in 2010. And nothing has changed. If you talk to the charities and the number of people who are coming in to get food because they cannot afford it. So access to food is really one thing, but being able to afford it is another. And this is where we've shown with our local and short supply chains that the cost of food is reduced. It's not, it doesn't have to be carted 21,000 kilometres for each person, which is what happens at the moment.
I was speaking years ago to Marie Bashir, the former governor of New South Wales, a wonderful woman who passed recently, and she said she had been talking to the Premier of China at the time, and this might be 20 years ago before Mr. Xi turned up, but she said, might have been the Prime Minister, I'm not sure what, he was top notch in China, and she said that his great fear was that was to be able to feed the people of China by, I think, 2050, make sure that they were all fed well, because if that didn't happen, you know, it would hit the fan. You stop feeding people or people start starving, and I mean in great numbers, not just the ones who are homeless who can be looked after a little way, but his great fear was being able to feed people. And the more people you put on the earth, the harder that's going to be. I mean, that's going to be, in lots of ways, that's going to be the big problem, apart from getting water, clean, fresh water to people.
Well, there's a myth going around, perpetrated by chemical companies, ag chemical companies, that we're going to have to feed the world's population, which will be 9 billion by 2050, so we've got to double our food production. Mm. When, in fact, the United Nations has done the numbers, and we grow enough food, 9 billion people right now, except it doesn't reach the destinations. No. So food distribution is very political.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything's political, isn't it?
It's big money in big food. And we're actually going to the new National Food Council is having a series of workshops across Australia for people to come in and help co-design. What does food security look like?
So this Harvest Festival, Penny's on when?
Friday the 20th and Saturday the 21st of March, next weekend.
All right. Good on you, Penny. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Ian. Bye.
Bye. John's in Launceston. Morning, John.
Good morning, Ian. How are you today?
Good, thank you, John.
Good. Sitting behind a car here at the Tasmanian Heirloom Festival this morning, formerly the Garlic and Tomato Festival for 10 years.
And it's
just as well, it's not just about garlic and tomatoes. It's been another very challenging year down here in Tasmania.
Tell me.
Yes, well, just, you know, dry, and the pockets of rain and the reliability of the rain. I've got this favourite joke now. If it wasn't for 8 inches of dirt and reliable rainfall, we'd be back in the Stone Age. So today's really, again, year 12 now, a huge event out at Quambia Estate, which is an old convict-built beautiful mansion out here at Selborne. And, you know, full menu of exhibitors and local produce. Great to hear that local lady just talking then, because we've stopped talking and started showing Tasmanians, certainly at this festival and many others, how to grow their own food. Come along and talk to the seed bloke, talk to the soil bloke, all that kind of stuff. And the ladies from the different industries and permaculture. Tasmania's sticker on the car in front of me is married nicely by the one next door called Trout Fish Tasmania. So we're very much, you know, maybe it's a cost of living thing. Forget about the price of Vegemite. This is people doing it for themselves and saving money, and that's the big thing, you know.
I used to talk to some people from the Seed Savers Network. That's the same sort of thing you're talking about, I suppose, isn't it? These were seeds from old varieties of tomatoes or whatever. And
yeah, he's here today too. We coerced him to come down. He started that seed business many, many years ago.
What, French bloke?
This is the big fella with the moustache from the mainland.
Oh, yes, of course, I know him, the big fella with the moustache.
Of course he does. Of course he would have seen him all the time there. But, I'm just very mindful of how they're seeing the brand, so, yeah.
Yeah, Jude Fanton, I think, was there was two people up in Northern Rivers of New South Wales, and it was called the Seed Savers Network.
Ours is Seed Freaks, reflecting Tasmania more than maybe Northern New South Wales.
Yeah.
But the man from, I can't mention his name, the guy that started pretty much broad mass scale distribution of seeds in Australia is here today, but he's not the only person. The women that are here and the men from the land and the country, and it's more than just garlic and tomatoes. It's very much, what did we used to do that we seem to have forgotten to do, Ian? And I know that you and I have discussed history and varieties in the past. So this is all the old stuff, the Tasmanian stuff that was here maybe 200 years ago. So potatoes and pears and cider and apples and the kids' games are a joy to behold. And I think last year we had 300 people at each of the chef's demonstrations. So maybe the motto shouldn't be just learn and meet people that can help you. But we've stopped talking about it and now encouraging and showing people how to do it.
Yes, well, food's the great thing of life. I mean, if you don't eat well, you may as well give it all away, I reckon. And if it's fresh and different, and if your peach tastes like a peach and your tomato tastes like a tomato used to be. And some people have, in these modern times, will really rediscover, that's what a tomato tastes like. Wow.
Yeah. If you drop ours, they squash. If you drop the supermarket ones, they bounce.
Now they're, as my friend said, they're speed-rated tomatoes. They're speed rated, so if you hit the wall at 40 k's an hour, they're all right, but at 42 they splatter. Something like
that. Splattering, our kids will be doing the same in the tomato and spoon race. The kids competitions are the highlight of the day. Watching kids eat garlic straight from a cup with nothing else.
That's cruel. That shouldn't be. It's like chilies. I mean, that should be banned. Look, God help me, making them.
Well, a few years ago, we were moderately impacted by COVID. I think we were the last festival held before the country was locked down, and we were the first one when it opened up. And we just said to people, just eat garlic. That'll keep COVID away.
Don't you love it? You meet someone and they say, "Oh, this is Narelle," and she says, "Hello." and you're hit with this wall of garlic, which just knocks you over. And people say, oh, garlic's good. You never catch a cold. The reason you never catch a cold is because no one will come near you to spread their germs because they smell like a garlic clove that's been – it is unbelievable. But anyway, look, I'm nothing. I love garlic. It's good. Garlic lovers, good morning, and we love you. But
it would be great to come down here and broadcast because the amount of experts to talk to would be phenomenal. And like you say, you'd have a 13-metre range around you when no one would come near you. There's that smelly bloke over there.
The Heirloom Festival. And yeah. All right, yeah. That's on where?
It's out of Quambie Estate, north of near Launceston. Uh-huh. And you can bring your dog too. This is a dog-friendly venue. Just don't take any of your food and music's on. So you could have been down here playing guitar and singing along.
Yes, wonderful. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Good on you, Johnny.
Right. Thanks, Dad. Cheers.
See you, mate. Bye. Quickly talk to Bede. Bede at Port Noarlunga Beach, which is in South Australia. Is that right, Bede?
Yep.
Tell me a story, Bede. What are you doing there?
Well, right now March Pass is on. Yesterday was the day two of states. I competed in the boards and the swim.
So this is surf life saving, is it, Bede?
Yes.
For what, the state championships in South Australia?
Yep.
And how old are you, Bede?
I'm 11.
And what are you competing in?
I'm competing in everything.
Everything. you don't... So you a nipper? Are you in nippers or...?
Yeah, I'm in nippers, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And how long have you been doing that?
Since I was 6.
Oh, boy, you'd be all right, wouldn't you? I reckon everybody, not that I did, I didn't do surf life saving when I was a kid because I wasn't a great swimmer, Bede. I could swim, I think, by the age of about 9 or 10. But, I wasn't a great swimmer. So, and I was doing other things. I played cricket every weekend I played cricket. So I wasn't in, but when I look at it now, I think what a wonderful thing for kids to do. Is there lots of kids in your school and stuff that belong to nippers and do surf life saving and things like that?
Because we live in the hills, we don't have a lot of kids doing it, but lots of kids near the beach do a lot of it.
And what's the surf like today at Port Noarlunga?
It's really flat, really, really flat.
Well, that's a pain in the neck, isn't it?
Not really for the swim, no. But for the boards it is.
Yeah.
And the board is nice and warm. It's nice and sunny.
And do they have the boats as well, the rowing?
No, that's in seniors.
That's in seniors. So this is juniors, is it? Junior state?
Yeah, juniors. This is our last states of the year.
All right. So now you're going to do this you're going to do this when you grow up. The surf life saving.
I have to do it until I get my bronze medallion.
Which means what do you have to do for your bronze? 300 meters swimming or something?
I have to be 16 and be a full lifeguard.
I see. And what have you got to do? How far you got to swim? You got to swim out to the things and back.
You got to be able to swim out to the cans and save somebody, and then go out with the board and save somebody.
All right. Sounds like a good. Sounds like an interesting life. And you've got a good day there, Bede.
Yep.
All right. Good brothers and sisters involved? Have you?
Yeah, and my dad.
And your dad as well. Bede, I'll meet you sometime. And whereabouts in the hills do you live?
Bridgewater.
Bridgewater, all right. I'll see you there sometime. You come and see me if I'm around. All right.
See ya.
See you, Bede. See you, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Molly Roy's in the studio with me. You need to come in a little bit closer, Molly. I met Molly up the coast in Byron Bay. Molly's from... Well, she'll tell you. Where are you from, Molly? Whereabouts you're from the United States?
Yeah. Family's originally from right outside of New Orleans, but I've spent the last years calling Austin, Texas home.
Uh-huh. How long you been in Oz?
It's been about 7 months at this point.
Mm.
Yeah, I left in July last year. We spent 2 months in Asia, and then I've just been on my working holiday visa.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because whenever I go and have a cup of coffee or I meet people, I'm always stopping to talk to people. The other day I was having a pizza, and there were two youngsters. Molly's a youngster. How old are you, Molly?
Yeah, 26.
26. And there were two people. We were having a pizza. We stood there and talking, and they were from Ireland. as a bloke and a girl, and they were from Ireland and they were working. He just got a job, I think, in IT, I think, or accounting, IT accounting. He may not have – that was 3 weeks ago. He may not have a job now. And she was doing bits and pieces, but she – because you're working and on a visa, she said you have to do some regional work. So she's off to Warrnambool, which is down south in Victoria, and she might be there now, Kel. What was her name, Kel? Do you remember? And she's off to a dairy farm in Warrnambool, which is down the bottom of Australia and can be cool there in winter. So she's off she might be listening, or the dairy farmer who's just had a young girl from Ireland turn up, he might give us a ring. 1300 700 222 is our number. Molly, what's your story? You came why? Are you on a gap year or what's your story?
None of the above. I just had a coworker approach me at work and ask if I wanted to go do this work visa while he had his last year on it. And I said, why not? I had no ties, was looking to move around. So, yeah, we just applied for it. But I'd been wanting to visit Asia for a while as well. So we took a couple of months before that, before we came here. It's been a journey.
I'll bet.
Yeah. I think when I'd met you, you met me at my other job that I'm working.
Yeah.
And I'd only been there a few months because 3 weeks into our 2 month Asia trip, I'd gotten into this big motorbike accident and pretty much lost all function of my arm. Yeah. So I couldn't even get a job for the first month that I arrived in Australia just because I was still wearing a sling and I couldn't really bend my arm or anything. But recovery's been really quick. I have most of my functions back in my hand now. So that's been really exciting.
Don't get on a motorbike.
Well, at least wear all of your gear if you're going to be on a motorbike. Yeah. Wear all your gear and, yeah, you just never know what the other person really is going to do. And you never think you're going to be that person involved either, but
no,
is what it is.
Yeah, well, especially in Asia. Bali, I had friends came back from Bali and they said the plane, this was, 20, 30 years ago, the plane back from Bali, because it's like a mecca for Australian kids. They all go to Bali for some strange reason. I don't know why. But the plane back from Bali, this was, as I said, this was probably in the 80s or 90s, was full of kids with arms in slings and broken legs and all that sort of stuff because the medical treatment in Bali wasn't great. So they came back on planes and, not everybody, but, I'm exaggerating a bit, but people were limping off planes and stuff like that because of motorbike accidents and things like that.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
So you're here in – so do you have to go and do – as I mentioned, the girl from Ireland, she's got to go and do some work in regional Australia to keep a visa. I don't know how long she wants to stay here. So what's your story? Can you stay here for a year or 2 years or half, 6 months, or what's the story?
Yeah, you can stay here for a year, but if you want to extend into your second year, then I would have to do the rural work, the 88 days. But if I choose not to stay for the second year, then I don't have to do that rural work. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of planned on not doing that. Make the most of my first year here and see what else.
And go home. So you didn't do uni or college or whatever, or what?
I did do uni, when I think we go in at like 18, 19, so I did do that, but I don't use my degree or anything. I kind of went off on my own path.
Yeah.
And I started bartending after college and the last few years in Austin, so I really found a passion with that. It feels like you're mixing potions and you get to talk to people. So you really create this really fun experience that's brought me over now to here. Yeah. I have some of those skills as well where I serve and I'm back into bartending now. And I just, the way you connect with people is really unique. Mm. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah. I was just talking to my guest, who's Molly Roy. She's, are you from Texas, Molly? Yeah, you have to come in closer.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, you're from Texas.
Yeah, I call Texas home, but my family's from Louisiana, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Willie's from Texas, so I mean, he's still there, isn't he, I think?
Yeah. If he still lives there, then I would feel like he's in the hill country of Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a bar out there called, I believe it's called Luck.
Luck.
I think.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since.
Tell me about your family. How big's your family, and how come you're here in Australia? I mean.
Oh, I mean, it's from a very big family. I'm number 9 out of 10 kids.
Wow.
Yeah, they're all one at a time from the same parents, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they thought I was crazy when I told them I was coming out to Australia because it's so far away.
Mm.
But I still had this entry from when I was 11 years old in my journal, and I was writing about Australia. I had the Aussie flag in there and everything.
Do you have a journal? I mean, does every kid in America have a journal? Or?
I don't know if every kid does, but I've had several growing up, yeah. And I still journal now.
Like your diary. Like
yeah.
Yeah. Today, but, I did this, and yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to keep it more interesting than just what I've done in my day, so hence coming to Australia, you know, that's something cool to write about that I've done.
So with a lot of competition, I suppose, in a family with 10, you know, you've...
I think everybody's got a chance for their spotlight. I think everybody in my family is so cool, and they're all very individual, and they all have their own thing going for them, which is really great. So I feel like it's less competition, and they're a very big support system. Even in terms of if we take it back to when my accident happened, All of them came in with different levels of support. So it's never been like, I never felt like I had to fight to get attention or anything.
So what do you want to do with yourself? I remember talking to you, you sort of had a guitar, but you sort of haven't followed it through or something like that. Or
yeah, I'm still figuring that out, but I think I need something with music and dance. That's something that's been newer for me, but has taken a big precedent in my life. And I'm just more and more becoming aware of that, but there's a special place in my heart with dancing, and I think that's where country music comes in with me, and that's what we've bonded over when we met. And it all comes down to dancing, I think. So I'm going to explore that after I leave here. Maybe get into more country music, more honky tonk bars. I'm not positive where it's going, but it's very strong. The flame is there, and it's been fanned.
lots of kids, I'll call you a kid, although you're 26, like you, here in Australia from all sorts of... I met a bloke from Brentford the other day. Brentford's in England. They've got a EPL, and it's the English Premier League soccer team. They've got a soccer team which is doing okay. As I said, from Ireland, from all over the world, and they're doing jobs that maybe Australians don't want to do or, involved in other things. There's too many jobs to do, and we've only got a small population really compared to the rest of the world. So, you find kids like you from Austin, Texas and Louisiana and all over the place working here and in Australia. And now, as I said, that Irish girl's down in Warrnambool working on a dairy farm. But she could be up north picking and she's a teacher, yeah. Interesting, a great experience to go anywhere. I never went anywhere. I wanted to stay in Australia because I was playing in a band and I thought life doesn't get any better than this. I just stayed doing that, you know, playing music and loved that. But it depends on your muse, I suppose, what you end up wanting to do.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, but I do find with at least country music in that genre, I've been able to connect with so many people because of it, and I think that's been really surprising to me. So I see that as something I didn't have before, and something I'm greatly interested in following through. So yeah, you meet people from all walks, like. I have a housemate who's Irish as well, and he's on his working visa. That man plays country music every time he's taking a shower. I can hear it through the door. So it's cool that we can always connect over that. And it's cool because then you start to learn more about that person. So you can connect on this common ground and then actually get to know more about them.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Music. I was just talking to someone earlier this morning in our program, and you'll hear the rest of the program, if you like, on the podcast. But we're talking about music. When I grew up, everyone had a band in our suburb. There was about three or four bands just in our little suburb, and, you know, 5-10 streets away, everyone was playing music. I don't think that happens nearly as much. I'm reading a book by Artie Shaw, his biography. Artie Shaw is a great American musician, songwriter, arranger. He's just the best. He was married to really famous all sorts of people. He married, you know, Ava Gardner, and but he did arranging. And when he was 16 or 17, he was playing in bands all over the place. He went on the road and played and learned how to arrange and put music together with musical scores. But he was playing all the time. And I reckon music, like anything, I suppose, but music is a great education because you meet lots of people. You're playing in bands, you play for balls, you play in bars, you play in pubs, you play for bar mitzvahs, you play in weddings, you play everywhere, and you meet people all the time. And you put things together and you go on the road, usually, you know, in big countries like America or I'm always amazed at American bands, and they say, "Oh yeah, we played 243 dates last year." I mean, that's 243 days they were playing out of 365. So it's a great, you know, and Artie Shaw talks about how he was playing, you know, he's playing every day and playing, you know, they played in these little Chinese restaurants where they'd have a band for 2 hours in the morning, like from 11 to 12 or 11 to 1, and then they'd play it in the afternoon from 4 to 6, and then they played at night from 10 to 2. And you've got to imagine that's about eight, you know, music sounds fun, but you play every day, all day, every day, if you're playing the trumpet or something like that. It's hard work. It's hard work. So, but it doesn't seem that. Doesn't seem to be happening now in, you know, kids are playing, but they're mostly on their phone. And you were talking about playing your guitar. I said, well, you better go and practice. Because Artie Shaw, when he was 16 or 17, he was playing 6 and 7 hours a day to learn his saxophone and stuff. And that's really what you've got to do to be any good at what you do. You're lucky if you can sing and you've got a great voice, so you don't have to do that. But you try and master a trumpet or a guitar or a violin, you've got to just put the hours in, which is, yeah. So yeah. That's what you need to do, Molly.
That's
I'm
so
talking
true.
To Molly
no.
Roy.
No, it's so true. I took piano for 10 years, and my teacher had a saying that was perfect practice makes perfect.
Mm.
But we were in there every day for hours on end.
And you've got to ask yourself too, I mean, is if you think that 6 hours a day is worthwhile, I mean, you become a really good whatever you're playing, saxophone player. And I remember the trombone player, what was his name? Doesn't matter. He did the same thing. And he'd go upstairs and practice every afternoon coming home, and his father would know he was practicing because he could hear it upstairs. But maybe you've got to ask yourself, you know, is that all there is? I mean, probably there's more to life than playing the saxophone really, really, really well. Maybe you don't have that, you know. Embrace all of life. I don't know. It's really, I think it'd be really lovely to be wonderful at something, you know, absolutely wonderful, but you forego a lot of other things, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You have to be really passionate about it, I think.
Yeah. So what's your move now? You're up north and you're in Sydney now. Where do you go now from here?
Oh, I think I'll go back to Byron Bay and I'll just keep working for a little bit, keep practicing the guitar. But for now we're just taking life a little slow and easy. So I'll go back to Byron for a little bit, and then I'm not positive what I'm doing after. I might travel a little bit more before I go back to the States, but yeah. The plan is as soon as I get back to the States to really plug into that industry. Yeah, some dancing.
Dancing.
Maybe
but
some
can singing. can you make a living dancing? I mean, you know, that's pretty ephemeral, isn't it? The work,
yeah.
You know?
I don't know. It may not be a full-time gig, but it's something I'm so passionate about. I think I'll let it take up most of my time, but I don't know what avenues that you can get paid.
Mm. Oh, well, yeah. You'd have to be in a show or go to Radio City Music Hall or, you know, all that sort of stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's shows, but, yeah, there's only, you know, 4 or 5 dancers in a show and there's thousands wanting to dance. But, look, you can hang around if you like and just sit and listen to Australia Talking. Our number's 1300 700 222. Quickly from Paul at Kays Beach. I thought I'd let you know, in our local paper here in Newcastle, in the public notices nearly every week, Telstra advertises they are closing down a public phone box. It's happening everywhere. If this keeps happening, nobody will be ringing you from one. I suppose it's because they feel free to use it present, says Paul at Kays Beach. I don't know, Paul, but I know they keep them in places where there's no mobile phone coverage. That's a shame. Go out and use them. Can we get a phone box call this morning, Carl? G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
Hi, Macca, this is Jimmy.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, it's my 21st birthday today, Macca, and I've been listening to you since I was just a little tacker, so I thought I'd call you up and have a yarn, mate.
Yeah, good on you. What birthday is it? Your 31st?
My 21st, mate, 21st.
Your 21st? Wow.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Jim.
Oh, well, thanks, guys. Great.
What are you up to? What are you doing?
Well, I'm just feeding out the horses. There's no stopping in the horse breeding industry, mate. I have to get up. Even after the day after your 21st birthday, mate, I'm up here throwing out loosen to some of the breeders and just sitting here looking at my stallion and, listening to your program.
And are these racehorses or what are they, Jimmy?
Yeah, all racehorses to varying success, of course. You get a couple that have gone pretty far and a couple that go to the races at Ballarat and then cop out there. But they're all beautiful. They've all got their own personality, and it's a joy to work with them, mate.
Jimmy, you a trainer, or what are you, a jockey or whatever? What?
Just sort of like a farm manager, you know. I do a little bit of horse education, a bit of horse breaking here and there, but mostly it's just keeping the place alive, mate, and slashing laneways and feeding horses and making sure everything's working all right, running pumps and ordering in feed and so forth. So, yeah, it's just sort of like a general sort of farm manager, mate.
And how long have you been doing that? Can't have been long because you're only 21.
Yeah, I've been doing it for coming up on 3 years now. I started working in agriculture when I was 17. I started going to uni as well 2 years ago. So I sort of balance up the life of what a uni student would be and the life of what a farm manager is and try and make it all fit.
And what were you doing at uni?
I'm doing conservation biology and ecology. So, yeah, looking at land management and ecology and, you know, just trying to make sure that country is looked after properly, Maka.
Yeah, well, that's a big task too, Jim. So, what did you do for your 21st, mate?
I had a little bit of a family get together in Melbourne in the Big Smoke, and we went to a steakhouse, and a couple of my old people came around, you know, grandparents and grandparents' cousins and sisters and so forth, and had a little bit of a do there, and then last night had a barbecue with all of my local mates and. Had a couple of drinks around the fire, and it was pretty good.
So these horses you look after, do they go to the races in Melbourne or around the place or what?
They go to the trainers in Ballarat at the minute, and they usually do their jump outs and trials at Ararat. It's always good to see a horse that you've seen grow up a little bit. Go out for their first jump out and go, oh look, there he is. You know, he's tucking his head in and he's looking great, and you know, you see a sense of achievement and pride in your work, I suppose, when you see that on the screen, yeah.
Jimmy, horses, I've said it for years because I notice I get calls from people who are on the road with their horses and their horse floats and the horse trailers and all that sort of stuff. They're big news. I think it's the technological age we live in, and owning a horse or working with a horse keeps you grounded, doesn't it, I reckon?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. They're really beautiful animals, and there's no better job that I'd rather wake up in the morning to than driving around and looking after horses, mate. You know, if I wake up every morning and had to sit on the computer all day, I think I'd go mad.
Mm. And what I love about a horse is their big eyes, that you look at them and they look at you, and their expression on their face doesn't change. They don't smile either, which is so annoying. I often ask a horse to smile, but they never do, like a dog. But their eyes, they just look at you and they just sum you up. I think they're very nice, very wonderful thing.
You wouldn't believe, Macca, but people are scared of their mouth. They don't like the mouth, you know, which is a bit strange. But most of the time they just stand in the paddock and look like they've just watched someone get shot.
All right, Jimmy, nice to talk to you, mate. And you're at Wallen, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Central Vic, yep.
Central Victoria, all right. Jimmy, great to talk to you, mate. And sometime when I'm near you or whatever, we'll bump into one another. Be nice.
Thanks a lot, Marco. Thanks for having me, mate.
Happy birthday to you. Thanks, Jim. See ya. that's Jimmy. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Mac, it's John from Robina on the Gold Coast.
Hi, John.
I just want to let you know that this is Lions Awareness Month, and so I spoke to you a couple of years ago, and Lions, our club, had actually given the people of Queensland a big red kidney bus. Well, we've now reached another milestone, and this month we've collected our 100,000th pair of spectacles.
Oh, that's right, because Lions do things about eyesight, don't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
Lions, it was the Lions' first sight, and what happened, it was actually started by Helen Keller when she actually challenged Lions to a sight project. So what it is, we collect the glasses here on the Gold Coast, we send them to Brisbane, they're graded, cleaned, repaired if need be, and then they're packed and they're sent to the needy or else the third world countries. We take normal spectacles, glasses, sunglasses, and no matter what, even normal sunglasses, we can use those because people who have cataract surgery overseas, they've got to have dark eyes for a little while. So, yeah, it's just one of the projects that we do.
How many glasses did you say, 100,000?
This is our 100,000th pair, and that's just our club. A lot of the clubs around Australia collect glasses and spectacles. but our club alone, we've kept a record, and this is our 100,000th pair.
We're living longer now, of course. So, and I suppose I always wonder what people did before glasses were sort of invented. You just stumbled around or you couldn't go anywhere. But then again, people used to die a lot younger. Now we live till 70, 80, 90. And so I suppose, it's only fitting that you can get a pair of glasses so you know where you're going or you can see who you're talking to.
Yeah, well, that's true too. And when you look back and you 70 or 80 years, whatever it is, you pull a drawer out at home if you wear glasses, you probably find all these old pairs of glasses just sitting there that you haven't doing anything with. Well, you know, contact the Lions clubs and I'm sure we'll collect them off you or take them to your local optometrist, and a lot of them actually give them their glasses to us for the recycling that they... change over when people get new ones.
Yeah, Lions and all those clubs like Apex and whatever do a wonderful job, John. And it's things that you don't think about, just get on with life. But there's all sorts of jobs that need doing that governments can't do. And doing a wonderful job. And it's just 100,000 pairs of glasses just in your Lions club, eh?
Just our club alone, yeah, here in the Robina on the Gold Coast. So, you know, and over the years, our club's been going 34 years or a bit longer, and since in that time, we've given back to the community over $3 million. So when you consider that, and every single club, 100% of what we collect must from the public must go back to the community. All our fees and insurances, etc., and administration costs, are paid by us at the members because we have to pay fees to be a member of the club. So go and join your Lions club. Go and give them a hand. They need as much help as they can get. And it is the world's best kept secret.
Good on you, John. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. I'm in the studio this morning with Molly Roy, who's here in Australia on sort of a working holiday and doing all sorts of things, but she's got a bad hand. And how long you did that seven... motorbike accident?
Yeah, it was about 7.5 months ago in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's getting better?
Yeah, it's getting better. I fully severed my radial nerve, so I had complete wrist drop for several months, but they did such a good job with the graft, and now it's all functions coming back. It's just very slow.
Yeah, so and you're doing physio.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would never get on a bike again. I've got a motorbike, but no. Oh, no. And when you see kids now with these e-bikes, which go like, and I don't know, are they in Byron Bay all over the place?
They're in Byron. Actually, one of my friends said they got ticketed for going 45 instead of 30 on their e-bike. So you really do have to be really careful on those. They go
but
really
not,
fast.
They're doing, yeah.
They're not listening.
Oh, no. Well, some of them 14-year-olds, how people are riding bikes, you know, and nobody does anything. Premier, you know, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, just it's out of control and the bike's left all over the footpath. It's just a scandal. It's a bit like cigarettes, you know, illegal cigarettes. $15 billion apparently here in Australia. You probably don't know about it, but at least $15 billion go to criminal organisations and we just sit back and look at that. We just sit back and, oh, that's a terrible shame, isn't it? What I wanted to just mention, we're going on the road and I'd like to come to your place. I'm going to take my band on the road and do some little concerts here and there, which I love. I love playing music. It's just the great thing, I think, in life to be able to play music and especially dancing. We did a dance a couple of years ago and it was just great fun. It wasn't like an old-time dance where we played the gypsy tap and the Canadian three-step and all that sort of stuff. We did a barn dance. That was about all because that was nice, and that's where you do a progressive and you get to meet everybody in the room. Although we had a whole pile of people. It was a free dance. We did it because it was in the middle of the drought. We did it at Coonabarabran. Love to do it again sometime. But just to play in a little room with, you know, 100 people or 50 people, it's just great fun. Speaking of... that last night I went to the Miracle Mile, the pacing championship for the $1 million. I think it's a $1 million race. It was won by a horse, Kevin Seymour's horse, I think, Leap to Fame, and they did an AI. Remember the AI song they did about Leap to Fame, Kel? We played that some because he was in Perth, I think, at the time, but he'd just been in New Zealand. and it went to New Zealand. I think it got pipped in New Zealand, but it's won a lot of races. And but anyway, I was there and I met some bloke came up to me. He says, "Macca," he said, I was talking to a mate of mine the other day, and he was at your little do which you played at that restaurant at Christmas." He said, and he said the band was fabulous. I said, "Oh, that's nice." nice to get some feedback. He said, "Yeah, you want to come to my place?" So I don't know. But it's great to be on the road because you get to meet people and you're playing music, and people love music. As I said, I think music sort of disappeared in lots of ways. As I said, there was always music around the place, and kids had their own little band, and they were daggy, like our band. It was daggy, and we probably played out a tune, but you know, you just did that, and then you'd hire a hall and put on a dance, and 12 people had come. So, but it was just what happened. There was music everywhere, and music's everywhere now. But I'm not sure that there's as many players anymore. And as I was talking about Artie Shaw, when you talk about Artie Shaw, I just realised he's 16, a 17 year old kid, and he grows up in New York, and then he gets on the road with all these other bands, and he's playing and learning. And they said, "Yeah, you can play all right, but you can't read. You can't play in this band." So he goes home and learns to read in about read music in about, I don't know, 3 weeks. And he goes back and said, "I can read now," because he's a good player. But he's playing 6 hours a day, every day. And so he becomes this great band leader. You've heard Begin. I wish I had a Begin. And it's got, and while that melody's playing, there's the other part of the band, the rhythm going da 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 da. So it's just a wonderful thing. But he was, and it's great. I'm really enjoying the book. The book is called something Cinderella. I've forgotten the name, the title. But I was reading about it. One of my listeners actually years ago, she wrote me a letter and said, "I'm doing this and I'm doing this, and I'm also reading Artie Shaw's The Trouble with Cinderella." I think that's what it's called. And it took me ages to get a hold of the book because it came out in 1952. And as my friend Hugh Lunn used to say to me, he said, "Oh, look, if you do a book, it'll be on the shelves for 6 months and that's it. Then it disappears and, you know, there's a number, but you never get a hold of it." Because I'm amazed. Molly, are you a reader? Molly Hoy, my guess, are you a reader?
Yeah, I'm a big reader.
Are you?
Yeah. I think that was very important to my mom growing up, was that all of her kids, like, read and read a lot.
Yeah. Artie Shaw, very bright boy, but he read a lot when he was a kid too. He realised he didn't know anything about it, and he's read and read and read and read and read and read. And it's that's another thing that's gone out the window too. But look, maybe kids in the future won't need it, but maybe all the things that we grew up with appreciating and loving will all be swept away, and there'll be another life, and there will be. But it's not my life, you know. Anyway, g'day. This is Macca.
Hey, hi, it's Ian in Montville. How are you?
Ian, tell the rest of Australia and tell Molly in particular, where Montville? Where's Montville?
Montville is probably the prettiest place on the planet in the hinterland north of the Sunshine Coast.
All right, yeah.
So just behind Maroochydore.
As people will say to me routinely, "Oh, it's God's country, Macca." Anyway.
Well, it is.
Anyway, Ian, what's happening, mate?
Well, look, thanks for the call. It's, I just wanted to mention that the 88th day of the year is March 29. Now, every piano has 88 keys. And
Molly's nodding.
March 29 happens to be International Piano Day. And I know you to be a lover of the piano and music in general, and I just thought you'd like to know that on one of your shows it will be International Piano Day, and a day worth celebrating, I think.
Is that that's a Sunday, March 29th?
It is, yeah, 2 weeks. Two weeks, Macca.
Well, we better get some piano players. I don't think we can fit a piano in this little studio we're in at the moment, but we could get an electric one in here. But, yeah, it's a wonderful instrument, mate, a wonderful. You play, Ian, do you?
Well, I do. We actually have met, Ian. We met at Noosaville when my wife was home cleaning houses and I was on the foreshore chatting with you. And I think modesty forbid me from mentioning. Look, I do play a little. It's been a couple of competitions over the years, and I was reprimanded for not mentioning this. Australia tried to find the best amateur pianist older than 30 as an amateur. That was about 6 years ago. Anyway, I entered and I won it.
Really?
And have you got I did. And then 2 years later, they did the competition again. It's all part of the Sydney International Piano Competition, which a lot of Australia knows about. And they opened it up to the Antipodes, the New Zealanders and Australia. And they said, well, if you want to enter again, you can. And I did, and I won it again. So I won it 2 years in a row. So I do play a little bit, but it's I like the Piano Maca because it makes me believe in tomorrow. Because it does.
That's a big call.
Well, it is, because you think about it. You play today, you were better than yesterday. You play, you're better than you were 5 minutes ago. And guess what? Tomorrow, you'll be better than you were today, even if it's only by 0.5%. And that's why I like playing the piano. Because every day, even though I'm 68, I get a little bit better.
You're any good? I suppose you must be okay. What sort of music do you play? Can you play stride piano? I used to read the New Yorker magazine all the time. I used to get it religiously, and I'd see what was on in New York, and just fabulous stuff. You know, you'd see people playing, and you think, oh God! And then there was this bloke, I forget his name, but he was a great exponent of stride piano. What's stride piano? Can you explain that to people? Do you know what that is?
Look, I'm not really familiar with that term. I'm sorry. I like to take a piece of music that I can technically manage and play it as beautifully as I can. Mm. That's my take on music. You play that really fantastic bit of jazz last week with that at the end of your show, which it's not what I play, but it's still wonderful use of a wonderful instrument. And you could, yeah, it could be so free on the piano.
And you play something you know well, or you play something simple, but you play it well.
It's simple to some and difficult to others. It's all relative. It's very subjective music, and I guess I'm better than the average, but not as good as the brilliant. It's just the way your genes stack up. But to use a common phrase, I sort of enjoy the grind. I actually enjoy the process of taking a blank piece of music and turning it into a piece that I can play as well as I can.
Yeah.
And play it to others. And I'm not a quick learner, but I'm sort of a bit obsessive. But when I start, I mean, if my wife is listening, she'd get back out by, so sometimes I get up and I'll practice at 3 a.m.
Well, music makes the world go round. I'm just thinking about, because I haven't seen much of it, but I remember we were in Lismore last year and a bloke came in who tuned pianos, but he also played, so we talked about the piano, and I think he went in the heats. That originally started in London, I'm not sure. You know this TV show called The Piano? I mean,
I do, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good show. Yeah, well, it's TV is always looking for, they're always looking for ideas from somewhere else. But the piano is a wonderful thing, and I was saying to him, you know, there used to be pianos in every other house, and everybody played the piano. So that doesn't happen anymore.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, yeah, which is a great shame. I mean, music's disappeared. We talk about music, and Tay-Tay's huge, and this one's huge, but generally amongst everybody, and people say, oh no, we play. Yeah, I know we play, but it doesn't, it just doesn't resonate around the place like music used to. And I think we need music. I really think that's what's missing. That's what's missing. If kids could, there's all mental health problems. I think, you know, if people could get into playing music in a band, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? You know that, Michael. You play with other people Ian. It's just, you forget about your world and you're just carried away by the music.
It's probably the nicest time you can have by yourself. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, look, I have a son who's a very good cellist, and I learned a lot about music from him. And he lives and works in Germany. However, he spent the best years of his young life between 10 and 22 locked in a practice room alone, practicing by himself. As you mentioned just recently, 6 hours or 7 hours a day.
Like Artie Shaw?
Yes, exactly. And does that not impress everybody? Couldn't that not impress you that a guy can, or any musician who's worth their salt and who plays well, just didn't pop out of their mother's womb and play? They've done a lot of work, and they love every minute of it. And I don't think anything actually impresses me as much as someone who's prepared to sit down and practice an instrument with the intent of playing it beautifully.
Well, they're driven. You know, Benny Goodman was the same, and the two Dorsey brothers, Jimmy Dorsey and Tommy Dorsey. Again, 6 hours a day. I'm not sure. Yeah, they're driven people.
That's the minimum.
You and I would never do minimum, that. Yeah. I've spent 6 hours a day doing radio. Anyway,
and that's worthwhile too. So.
Michael, we'll talk to you another. We'll ring you. I'm going to try and get a piano in here. We'll wheel it.
You can always come and do a broadcast from my home.
All right.
Home's called Lucas Parklands, and on that particular Sunday, I'm having a concert to celebrate International Piano Day in my home. You might be interested in that as well.
Got to fly, mate. Good on you. Bye.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Oh, Michael's in the phone box. You get points for that. He was. Is he gone? Has he?
No, I'm in.
Are you there?
So hello, Macca.
How are you, mate? So the phone box hasn't been dismantled yet, no?
No. Well, I can tell you that, and I'll talk about music in a minute, but the phone box outside the front of the cop shop at Houston works fine. The only problem is that I couldn't stay there with the truck parked at the front of the cop shop because it was in a no-standing zone.
Oh.
And I was waiting for the cops to turn up and go, "Hey, you can't park there, mate."
Tell him you're talking to Macca.
I had to go. Well, yeah, I would have, but the phone box works perfectly well, and then there's another one a little bit further up the street as well, which also works. So,
Australia
in far west New South Wales,
yeah.
And it's a beautiful part of the world here. In autumn time, we've had a lot of rain, up to 200 mils in a few places, but right now it's 23 degrees under a perfect, brilliant sunshine, cloudless outback sky.
Wouldn't it be nice to be in Houston? I should be there. I like to be in the studio, but I love to be out there, mate, and I love to talk to people who just wander up. Michael, what are you driving the truck for? What are you doing today?
So we move a lot of – I've spoken to you before. I rang you from Leith Valley in the phone box there last year, and you sent me a T-shirt.
Oh, did I? All right.
Yeah.
Well, you're not getting another one. Go on.
No. So we move oversized agricultural equipment all around the place, and so right now I'm heading to Glargambone to pick up an air cedar bar. It's about 6 metres wide and about 5 metres high, and tow it up to Tarum in central Queensland.
Oh, well, keep on the road and give us a ring, Mike. Thanks for ringing us from the phone box.
And speaking of music, I'll take my guitar with me when I'm in the truck, and when I get a chance to play it, I'll pull up at night time and whip her out for a bit of a scrum.
All right, well we're going to go on the road with our little band. I'll ring you and you turn up and you can do a little guest spot in our show, okay? I've got to fly.
See you, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye. Well, Molly Roy, that's the ball game. Molly Roy's from the land of baseball, which I love, and guitars. I love America, I'll say it again and again and again. So I know there's contradictions, but there's contradictions everywhere, kids. I even used to love Coca-Cola, Molly Roy. Molly, thanks for coming in. Good on you. Good luck.
Thanks, Macca.
Wherever you are, stay tuned on ABC Local Radio. It's a great morning. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.